Welcome to another episode of the Bowden Education Podcast with me, your host, Catherine Carden. We take time in our podcast to talk to people who are making a positive and transformational impact in education. Our autumn podcast series showcases educational professionals who are truly committed to their work and those whose work is vital for children in our education system. Today, I'm delighted to be chatting to Lakita Neal. And Lakita has just completed the first of her 2 years for her ECT, the two-year induction for new teachers, and is teaching in Year 4. Lakita completed her teacher training at Edgehill University, and during which time faced some personal challenges and the challenge of training to teach during the pandemic, which nobody had been prepared or could foresee, as well as her own illness. Teaching is Lakita's passion, and in her own words, she loves shaping minds every day. So welcome, Lakita.
Thank you. Hello. Glad to be here.
So we're going to start off, if you tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we're going to pick your mind of all the wealth of experience you have over your first year. So talk to me a little bit about yourself and your career today, even though it's short, but talk to us.
So I studied in Edgehill University in Ormskirk, and I chose to go there because it was a really good university for student teachers, and I knew that, so I thought that course was definitely for me. And I did the 3-year primary education degree, specialising in English. So I did 3 placements whilst I was there, and it was quite nice because they try to make sure that you get a wide scope and you go out into Key Stage 1 and Key Stage 2. So I did 2 in Year 5 and then 1 in Year 2. And I think that really helped me because then I could see where I wanted to begin. And that for me was Key Stage 2 because I just found it easier to manage. And I always kind of said, oh, I don't know about Key Stage 1, but now that I've done it for a year in Key Stage 2, I do think I'd be happy to move further down. I think it's quite nice to see what both of them are like. So I did that for 3 years. And then obviously that was during the pandemic, everything was going on. It was studying in the pandemic was really difficult because so many people were just forced to, obviously that year we were all at home, we had to carry on with it and do what you were expected to do if you were at university, but from home. And that was a real challenge. So I did that for 3 years, and then I came back home to Manchester, which is where I grew up. And then luckily I managed to land a job in a school in Bolton, which wasn't too far from me, in a Year 4 class. And that was quite a process because I was quite lucky and got the job in April, but I also had friends around me that were applying for longer. And I think that can be a daunting process as well, because you're so used to being at university that when you have to go out there and put yourself out there, like I didn't even know how to word my cover letter or what I was looking for. And that kind of stuff is really hard to navigate because at the same time, you still need to be on top of your uni and you can just get yourself in a bit of a pickle. Mm-hmm. So I found that was quite difficult because some of my friends chose to do it as like they would focus on uni and then do the jobs afterwards, whereas I kind of did a bit of both, and that way I was able to get the earlier job offers, but it's really hard to manage. So then like my university would slip a little bit, but then I was focusing on jobs, so that I found quite tricky to balance, and I'm sure other people would feel that way too.
Yeah, and we certainly on Twitter we regularly see those that are in their teacher education years getting to the end of those and panicking because they haven't got a job by. There's lots of panic.
Yeah.
And I know that Mr. T's NQT's, he's a great support, gets tagged in a lot at that time, and is forever saying, don't panic, don't panic, don't panic. But there are always a lot of people that are panicking if they haven't got the first job, other people on their corporate jobs, and that kind of ripple effect of everyone's got a job except for me, or where do I look, when's the best time, and so on. So
exactly, and that's really disheartening as well, like if you've not managed to land a job and everybody else is getting excited about their classrooms. And like one of my really good friends was in that position where we'd all kind of managed to land one, and she was really stressing out about it because people almost see it as like, oh, now I've just got to do supply, and you know, you've done so well at university, but there's just so many people going for these jobs. So I would probably recommend to get in as soon as you can, and when they do come up, try and at least, even if you're not applying as soon as you see it, if you get them early, then you kind of have a bit more time to put effort into your application.
I've got a bit of feedback, but don't worry about that, and we'll work through that. What attracted you then to teaching in the first place? What gave you that, right, I want to go and train to teach?
I think, I know it's quite cliche, but I think it did stem from my primary school teachers, because I went to primary school in quite a deprived area, and the teachers did not, you know, it's a stereotype that like you're in a deprived area and it might just be a deprived education, but it was not like that at all. Like, the teachers were amazing, and they'd worked really hard to provide an education to all of these children that might not have had those kind of role models outside of school. So it was really important to me to work somewhere just like that. So when I was looking at schools, and when I'd done, I did a little bit of supply before starting my job through the summer. And it was really important that I could see the differences in schools and see the children that were privileged and see the children that weren't. And I just really wanted to work in a school with children like I was back then. Because for me personally, like going to school and having that role model, I had really good bonds with my teachers because of that, because I felt like they were putting so much effort in. And, you know, obviously this goes for everybody. Every child can feel that if their teacher really tries. But I think it was so much more special to me because not a lot of children had that at my school. So I think for me, it was more just being able to do that for somebody else, because I used to do this thing when I was really young, and this is really sad, but I'd like on my hands, I'd remember each one of my teachers throughout the years, and I can still do it now because I did it so much. And I think to have loved school the way that I loved it, I just really wanted to be that for someone else. And yeah, I think that was the biggest thing that drew me into it. I just knew that I wanted to do that.
And so if you know where you were going, or...
Yeah, I think from about high school, end of high school, there was a blip where I thought I wanted to be a midwife, but I just wasn't no good at science. And I was a bit like, no, I don't think I can do that. So I thought about that for a little bit. And then by the end of high school, I just knew that I wanted to study primary ed and go in that direction.
So after your successful yet very unique with the pandemic teaching degree, you moved into your ECT year. What were your biggest fears and worries about that transition of moving from teacher education into your ECT with your own class and so on? Did you have...
I think it was just that it was your own class. Like, that comes with a lot of weight. And obviously you do get to teach. I think it went up to about 80% in my final year on placement. But it's somebody else's class. So if you do something that wasn't quite right, or, you know, at the end of the day, you can always go to that teacher and be like, I don't know what I did wrong or how I can change it. But when it's your class, there's a lot of pressure to, you know, do a good job. And it's not even just performing well for the job. It's almost like I had this conscious of, if I don't do this well, these children are going to lack knowledge that I'm supposed to be giving them. So that was huge, and I felt like that was a big weight on your shoulders. And that did fear me quite a bit, because it's hard to manage everything that comes with teaching. And I found that for me, obviously, yeah, when I went to university, it wasn't the, you know, ordinary university story, but that for me made me realize the importance of my own time and having time for me and switching off. And I was so worried that I couldn't do what I wanted to do without giving away every single part of me and working myself into the ground, which I think a lot of people worry about, because teaching is, it's so hard to switch off. It's a really, you know, you're always on the job, you're always thinking.
And with that, have you managed to stay on top of your workload, or have you found it like, you know, we'd be lots of media reports, we hear lots of things about teachers just drowning in their workload, and have you managed to stay on top of it, or has it been as daunting as you feared, or some people say?
I think at times you definitely go through periods where it's harder because for whatever reason something's going on that week and you've just got 5 days of, you know, no ordinary day and things are happening in school and you've got so much to do, and it can get a lot. But I do feel as though I managed to keep it to a point where I still had my time, because that was really, really important to me. And it almost got to the point where I was like, I don't think that, you know, after everything, I don't think I can put myself in a job where I'm going to constantly be working, because that was a fear for me. But the thing that I did was every single week I didn't mind staying behind and getting things done, because the reality of the job is that it's so hard to clock out at three. Like, I just had, you know, there's planning, there's marking, there's so much that I need to do. But I didn't mind doing that, as long as when I went home on a Friday, I just did absolutely nothing. I just relaxed. And then a Saturday as well. So Friday evenings and Saturday, I did absolutely no work all year. Whereas on a Sunday, I didn't mind by the end of the day doing a little bit to balance that out. But I always knew that my Fridays and my Saturdays were mine. And I think that really helped my work-life balance.
Yeah, I think feeling like that is really, really important, because before long, if you start blurring boundaries, what can happen is that you get, you know, that Friday night begins to edge away and suddenly you're kind of working constantly. And so I think setting those boundaries are really key. There's a couple of things I want to ask you about fears and worries, and you may not have had these, but there's a couple of things that I know that if we've got those people that are just transitioning into their ECT year or in their final year of their training might be kind of at the forefront of their mind. And these are two things that certainly people quite often talk about worrying. What about the parents? Because you're teaching the children and that's great, but with the children come parents that you have to interact and parents aren't always happy or easy to deal with.
Yeah, I found that. So I remember my first ever parent like speaking to me about a problem that was going on, and the feeling that I got was like my whole body just going like, oh, I don't know what to say, like this is a lot, what do I do? But I found in my school heavily pushed that if a parent does come up to you one-on-one, you advise them to the school office, and it, you know, you have a bit of a minute to think, because if somebody's approaching you at home time, or it's really hard to deal with those kind of situations. So I think somebody said to me that when a parent comes up to you, you need to listen to understand before you listen to respond. And I think that was a really good piece of advice, because sometimes you can just be like, and want to say what's coming to your mind, but actually that's their child, and to them, you know, their child is the most important thing to you. You've got 29 others that need your attention, but for them, you kind of have to understand that. So parents, dealing with parents is a big thing. And my first parents evening, I was very, very nervous. But I think that comes with time. You have experience speaking to them and you know how to communicate a bit more, whereas at the start, I really did lack that. So I think that's a fear that a lot of people will be feeling.
Yeah. And the other one is the obvious, that you're going to be the new kid on the block in your school. And that first day, it's like first day at school worries, but now you're the teacher and how you fit in and all of that. Will I make professional friends, or where's the teacher? Can I use any in the bathroom?
Yeah, like this is one that is quite tricky, because I found adjusting to professional relationships quite difficult, because I'd come from university and I'd never had to, you know, everybody's best interest is the children, and sometimes that can lead to disagreements, and I found that when I was first starting, I didn't know how to approach those conversations because I'd never had to have them before. But I would say that I was really, really lucky. Like, I need to get that out there, because I know that not every single person has the experience I did, but I was in a really good school and I still am in a really good school that they provided me with a lot of kind of bringing me in anyway, and my mentor is amazing, and having your mentor is almost like a safe space, because even if you really struggle to settle in, you've got that one person that you can talk to. But I was just really lucky that everybody was friendly and I didn't get made to feel like there were any cliques or anything, which I know can happen in schools. And that's a real shame, because it's not about that. It's not about all of that. It's about the children doing a good job. And I think just being yourself and going in and knowing that you are in a work environment, you're not trying to make friends, but if you can make friends along the way, then that's really special.
Yeah, I think a lot hinges on the culture of the school and how welcoming it is. and that relationship with your mentor, that is really key. And it is a little bit luck of the draw, you're right. So fingers crossed that everyone has great mentors and a lovely school culture that embraces their new staff. So having got over your fear, how did you find your first year of teaching?
I absolutely loved it. I thought it was amazing. Every single day, I didn't feel like I was going in to work. I felt like I was going in to spend time with these children that I cared about and wanted to do well and wanted to have an impact on in some way. But this again goes back to the fact that I was so lucky, and it really is luck of the draw. Like, you can go to a school and not really be able to gauge it on your interview, end up working there. And as an ECT, you want to take anything. And then it could be, you know, my friends are in schools where they're getting treated rubbish for what they're doing. And it's not great. But for me, because I had my head teacher said to me on one of the first weeks that I should go into my room, I should shut the door, I should make my mistakes, and then somebody would come and observe me. I think she waited like 3 weeks to come and observe me. And that gave me so much time to just be like, right, what on earth am I doing? And there was nobody there to judge me. It's not like that. And that helped me a lot. And I think it is the people around you that shape your first few years, because I did not know as much as I do now on that first day in September. And without those people that helped me, I would never have got to this point. So it is a shame that some people really early on in the profession think, you know what, this isn't for me, because of the people that they're working with. Whereas for me, it was the complete opposite. And I had that room, I guess, to grow and to learn from people. And I had loads of opportunities to go and watch my colleagues, or they would come and watch me, but in a really positive way and giving helpful feedback. And, you know, that gave me a lot of room to grow.
Yeah, I think something we need to move on from this the whole notion that observation linked to judgment. And observation, people worry about being observed. Whether they're in their teacher education year or beyond. And I think really what we need to get into the habit of is seeing observation as something that's about development, not about judgment. And I think if you're in a school that's already down that path, you're in a great place to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And that's learning whether you're in your first year, your fifth year, your 10th year, because we're always learning. And we'll change the way we teach. New experiences, new ideas will manifest all the time. And I always say, no matter how long you've been teaching, if you're no longer learning, it's time you should
learn. Exactly.
So I think it's great as well, though, to hear an early career teacher having such a positive experience.
Yeah, I think that's definitely it. I think the positive reinforcement, and obviously, you know, I did not go in there knowing what I was doing, because you come from university and it's a whole new ball game playing and being in school. But because they were phrasing it in a way that was helpful, I almost wanted to grab that feedback, run with it, and then show them how I changed it. Whereas I think if I was in a school where an observation was a scary thing and they would come in and be really annoyed about the places that you need to improve, then what is the point? Because like you say, you are going to be improving forever, and if you can't do that in your ECT years, when on earth can you do that?
Yeah, and I think that whole judgment, like you say, when you come in and there's that kind of judgment culture, it does create a separation and a tension between the person being observed, so you can't be open and ask for help. And it's that openness of saying, you know, I had a really tricky lesson. I'm really struggling to work with this child. My subject knowledge in this area is a bit, it's not great. It's being able to say those things, isn't it? And not being judged
by it. Exactly, yeah.
Well, let's see how you can go about developing. And I think that's important. But as well, to hear someone have such positive experience when we do hear the negatives coming through social media and mainstream media and so on about, teacher attrition and how it's miserable. I think it is really important to remember, of course, there are those instances and cases, and the data says that it's a challenging profession. And I'm not doubting that. But there are a lot of people who are working in the profession, a lot of people new into the profession, that are having really positive experiences.
Yeah.
So I'm expecting that some early career teachers hopefully will be listening to this. And if you were to offer advice to those just starting out, so where you were a year ago, what would it be?
I think my biggest piece of advice, and the one that I was trying to tell myself, was to take everything a step at a time. Because I think when you first begin, you know, there's so much, and even silly things like your displays that you just, nobody gives you that. You've not got a module in university on displays, but, you know, there's this expectation that the ECT will have an amazing classroom. And I had no clue how to begin with a display. So I think there's things like that to think of. There's, when you actually start, there's little things like reading diaries and things that that school does and the way that they do it. And I think you cannot go in and take all of that in one day, because you will just never come back. Like, you'll just want to run away. And in those first few days, I was trying to do it all. I was like, why is my English not great? Why is this not great? Why am I? But I didn't know, you know, you have to just learn, and you can't go in there expecting that you'll know it all. So I would say use that first week just to figure out how to get the children in, bring them in, and routines, and getting to know them a little bit, because you can't try to do too much at once, which I think a lot of people do, and myself included, tried to run for it and try and get everything right. And then I was like, oh, why am I not doing this right? And it's because I've not given everything the focus it needed. So I just slowed it right down. One week it might be in routines, the next it might have been the layout of their books. And that really helped me to slow down, take it in, and try and dig my way through a little bit.
And what if there was an ECT, they're in their first term, and they're feeling a little bit isolated, they're the only ECT in their school, feeling a little bit lonely? Because I think teaching, strangely, I always say it's strange, because you're surrounded by people, and mainly children all day, but it can be quite lonely. You're that person in the classroom. What would you recommend in terms of building a network, and has that helped you?
For me, it was, you know, I realised quite quickly that I was tired after work, and I didn't have as much time to go out with my friends or, you know, make plans to do things. So I realised that because of that, you kind of have to branch out in school and try. And my mentor, again, is amazing. And for me, she was a lifeline, because I didn't have to put a lot of effort into that, because she was coming to me and speaking to me and making sure I was okay. And I think if you have got a good mentor who's friendly and you can go to them, I would start there, because then you've got somebody that you can run things by. Or, you know, the questions that you've got, they are not silly questions. And I used to always think, oh, I can't ask another one. It's going to, like, this is like the fifth one in a day. But there's so much to learn. And if you want to do a good job and you want to really impress and try your best, then asking for help is not a downfall. That is actually a real strength, because you're seeking that out, you're being proactive, and you're speaking. And I think that shows that you really care. So just starting with the people that you're given, because everybody's given a mentor, and hopefully you've got a good one that you feel you can have that relationship with. Obviously, if that isn't the case and you can't speak to your mentor and you feel a bit uncomfortable in that situation, then I've seen so many people utilize Twitter, and there's a huge community on there now where other colleagues and people will give their advice and experiences. And I think that's invaluable to some ECTs who don't have that at their school.
I agree. I think you'll get within school to a greater or lesser degree, but I also think the impetus is on you. And I know if you're not particularly gregarious as a person, that going into the staff room can be quite daunting in the early days. And I think it's easier to make excuses to stay in your classroom, justifiable excuses, that I'm just going to do a bit of marking and tidy up, I'm going to lay the resources out for next lesson. You know, these are all completely valid, but I think the longer you leave it to go into the staff room, the harder it becomes.
Yes, it does.
I would say push yourself in early on, but utilize social media, you know, with the usual cautions that not everyone's positive and supportive. I think use those networks and get support. And of course, at Bowden Education, along with us, I host a monthly ECT network where it's completely informal. Any ECT, primary or secondary, special school, wherever you're doing your early career teacher, Or, in fact, if you are in your teacher training, you can come along. And myself and Andy Taylor, who is at Mr. T's NQT's, host this with special guests, and you're going to be one of them. So we're looking forward to that. But that's, you know, don't be frightened to reach out. I think,
isn't
it? Go to these things, even if you, even if there's a big pull on you saying, I don't want to, push yourself below, because I think it, joining and creating that supportive network can be transformational as well.
Yeah, meeting other people that are teachers and understand what you're going through. And I understand the fear of going into the staff room at the start, because although everybody was so welcoming, it is still daunting going in and thinking, right, what am I going to say? Am I going to fit in? But I think you're right, biting the bullet and getting in there. And, you know, and I've also written down that as a piece of advice, that you're not going to be perfect, because I had this in my head, this idea that, you know, I'd done okay at university and I was going to go in and things were going to go exactly how they did on my placement. It would be absolutely fine. Whereas I remember one of my first lessons, and I think I said something and the children like looked at each other as if to say, like, oh, and I was like, oh my goodness, what did I say? And like, you panic because you want them to like you and you want to make relationships, but then you also want to focus on this and that, and that, you know, there's so much that you're not going to be perfect. And even a teacher that's been teaching 20 years is not perfect. So I would say that just enjoy it, try and take it all in, but also take your time. You've got so long to learn, and you know, it's more enjoyable that way when there's not as much pressure on yourself.
Absolutely, I would agree. I think the whole idea of perfectionism is an issue way beyond teaching, about how we strive for perfect. There isn't perfect.
No.
You know, we have these whole notions of outstandingness in education, don't we? You know, thanks to Ofsted gradings. But and people say, well, they're an outstanding teacher, and I'm sure we all have moments of outstandingness. I don't believe that anyone is outstanding all the time, and if they need to write a report or something about how to do it without keeling over, I think most of the time we're good enough. And I think that's important to take in as well, that, you know, it's good enough to be good enough.
Exactly, we're only humans and we do as much as we can, but to say that you're going to be 100% every single day, every single lesson, even last period on a Friday, it is so difficult to hold that up, and your mental health would suffer massively if that's all you were doing 24/7.
Yeah, absolutely. So back to you now. What in your short time in teaching so far has been your greatest achievement so far, something you're most proud of?
I would say that past year as a whole, and managing to make relationships, like, you know, have bonds with the children that were rooted in mutual respect, and we got to a point where I felt like they could come to me and talk to me, and it wasn't all about school, it was, you know, confiding and having that, being that person for somebody that might not have that. And, you know, as I said at the start, that was always my goal, and I feel like I've started to take steps towards that in my first year, and that has been huge for me, because I'm looking back on it now and I'm thinking, actually, even though you go through periods where, like, for example, my first set of assessments, you put them in and then you look at the data and you think, like, oh, have they changed since last year, what's happened, and you get yourself in a bit of a pickle. Whereas when I finished that year, I looked at each child and I was like, you know what, you've all made some progress in some way and you've come so far. And it's not about who's done this in that, or who's, it's about, you know, this child couldn't do this at the start of the year and now they're doing this. And it's each mini goal for each child, understanding them. And I felt like last year with my first ever class, you just love your first class, and everyone keeps telling me it's your first one, like, you know, you're gonna feel like that. But I really did, and I felt like I'd had a relationship with each of them and sent them on their way, and they've grown in that year, and that for me is the best thing. That's priceless, and that's why I want to keep doing it.
Great. And what are your aspirations?
That's a really good question, because we can go in so many directions, but I just say to continue building up my career as much as I can, working as hard as I can, whilst also prioritizing that work-life balance. I don't ever want to get to a point where I lose the love of teaching because I'm under too much. And, you know, I know that that can happen because I've seen it happen and I've spoken to people that it's happened to. But I think just trusting the process, giving what I've got to give, but not giving absolutely everything, because I've still got a life outside of teaching. I love being a teacher, but I'm still me. And just really keeping my love of the profession at the heart of everything that I do, so that hopefully that can take me quite far.
I'm sure it will. I'm sure it will. It's been an absolute joy to speak to you today, Lakita. And we're, as I say, you're coming along as a special guest to take questions from ECT's first ECT Network of the Year on the 15th of September. And of course, you can follow Lakita on Twitter at MissNQT5. And ask any questions, or follow what everyone's up to on there, and look at the networks as well that you follow. I think that's helpful. Go in and see who you're and follow that as well. So thank you so much. I know this will be so useful to those that are starting their ECT year, or, you know, in their teacher training. It's great. Thank you so much, and I wish you all the very best.
Oh, thank you so much.